Okay, today is November the 15th, 2012. My name's Steve Labruda. I'm working on behalf of the H.J. Lutcher Stark Center for Physical Culture and Sports. And as a part of the 1968 U.S. Olympic Team Oral History Project, I'm interviewing famed Olympic swimmer Kathy Corcion over the phone about her experiences in the 1968 Olympic Games in Mexico City. Thank you very much, first of all, Kathy, for doing this.
Okay.
Okay. Let's talk a little background. You said you were adopted, right? How old were you when you were adopted, Kat?
I was 13 days old.
Oh wow! Gosh, so just a newborn. And so
I was a newborn.
Yeah. And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Long Branch, New Jersey. In Monmouth County, I'm right on the Jersey Shore. I grew up 1 mile from the beach.
Yes, ma'am.
And we're not down near Atlantic City. We're up north near New York.
Okay.
So we're 46 miles south of Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And we're 80 miles north of Atlantic City, so it's north central Jersey Shore.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. More of the Seaside Heights area.
Farther north. Bruce Springsteen Country, Asbury Park, Long Branch,
okay.
Red Bank. Yep.
All right. So, what were your earliest athletic pursuits that you remember?
Okay. Well, I think I can preface that by saying where we lived in this particular part of the Jersey Shore.
Mm-hmm.
Most people that go to the beaches here are year-round residents. We have a summer population, mm-hmm. but mostly we're a year-round population.
Okay.
And many people that live here commute to New York to work, so it's pretty much a year-round group. All of the kids that grow up around here, essentially in the summertime, belong to what we call beach clubs. The coast here is dotted with little clubs. Where there are pools and ocean, lockers, cabanas, snack bars. It's basically our life. It's our culture in the summer.
Okay.
I think almost every kid that grows up around here spends his entire day at the beach. That's summer.
Okay. So it was just all about swimming then when you were growing up.
It's all about water when I was growing up. And each of these beach clubs have their little summer team.
Mm-hmm.
That are just for summer,
uh-huh.
and they compete against one another. And, you know, I don't think there's any kid that grows up around here that doesn't learn how to swim either, you know, formally or by osmosis, because if you can't swim, you can't play with your friends.
That makes sense. So when did you start realizing that you were pretty good at the swimming thing?
Well, it's funny you mention that, because excuse me.
Sure.
I'm an artist. I'm a painter now. I'm an artist late in life. And I just had done a painting called Me and Monk, and it was my earliest memory of being maybe 2 years old, and a lifeguard would snatch me up and throw me under his arm like a football and bring me into the ocean underneath the waves. And I thought I was going to die. And every time he did it, I was certain I was dead. And then I never was. And so I just developed this love of throwing myself into the ocean no matter what, no matter how big the waves were, no matter how small. And when I was about, you know, four or five, I got swimming lessons around here. And when I was six, I joined the summer team on my beach club.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't want six-year-olds, but my mother twisted their arm and they let me be on the team. And that was the beginning of everything.
Outstanding. So you had encouragement from the parents.
I had encouragement from the parents and then the coach. And, you know, the summer team coach told my mother that, you know, that she should not, that she absolutely had to find me a year-round program because I was going to be that good.
Outstanding.
So she did.
Great. And that's how you initially got involved with it and then started swimming for the local teams.
Yes.
Yeah, great. All right.
Back then it was the AAU. It wasn't, you know, it was AAU. It's now United States Swimming, but the AAU was the governing body then.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, great. And obviously, you're getting pretty fast, even back then, right? I mean, so and when did you start actually really winning? Because I mean, you in the '68 Olympics, you were 15 years old. You were pretty young. So
I was. Well, let me see. When I was, oh my God, I don't want this to be a boring interview.
No, you're great. Go on.
Well, I guess when I was about eight, somebody, like an early coach, I don't recall, you know, somehow entered me in the Junior Olympics, which was not organized like it is now. It was very, you didn't have to qualify, you just showed up.
Right.
And I swam the 10 and under 50 free, and I got second, although I was eight. And then there was this little write-up in the local paper that, you know, blah, 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 destined for this or that. And then pretty much it just started like that. Locally, as an age grouper, I was usually, you know, I was usually on top. When I was 10, I think I was first and second in the country in a few events for my age group and swam in this Canadian-American dual meet in Canada.
Oh, wow.
I remember that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So did your mom not only encourage you in your swimming, but did they go to meets and things like that?
Oh yeah, my parents went to every meet. My mother was a social butterfly, so for her this was just a chance to meet people and have a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
She didn't know anything about swimming. I don't even think she knew how many seconds were in a minute. My dad loved it because he just took so much pleasure in. My dad loves children, anybody's children.
Uh-huh.
So for him, it was a big deal when the meet was over. You know, he was a guy that would go buy pizza for everybody, buy ice cream for everybody. You know, he was that kind of guy. He was a happy, fun, cheering guy.
Yeah.
And they were much more involved in the social, I mean, it's not social, but the socialization aspect of it, than with the pushing me, you know, they didn't know my times or anything. They weren't those type of people.
That's great. That's a really vivid, good picture. I really like that. I already like your parents. That's awesome.
Well, I'll give you one flashback I have when I was really little, swimming backstroke in lane one of a tiny little meet. I was a little girl. And my mother liked to wear spike heels everywhere she went. And I remember her jumping up and down in a miniskirt on the side of the pool deck and then falling down. That was my, you know, that was my mother.
Awesome. Okay, so you did the Junior Olympics thing and did well. Did you swim for your school? Did your school, or was it all like the AAU stuff?
It was all AAU because there was no, in New Jersey, I know New Jersey's backward that way. We didn't have any public, we didn't have any swimming pools here indoors in the state, except for very few at YMCA. So there was no such thing as pool swimming, except for maybe private pools. And high schools not only didn't have swimming for either sex, male or female, they didn't have, when I was in high school, there were no sports for girls.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
We didn't have sports. We had intramural sports. We didn't play against other schools.
Sure.
So I only was able to do AAU swimming.
Okay. So how did it
work? That to the young girls today, they don't even understand or believe it. And it wasn't even that long ago.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, absolutely. It's not. It is not. Yeah. It's amazingly a short period of time ago. So how did you then, before the 68 games, I mean, you're 50, how did you train? Was there any training, or did you just...
I trained with my AAU team.
Okay.
And we were always trying to find pools. We were always trying to find a facility, and we changed facilities a lot, and it was a small team, but we had a pretty good team, and, you know, there were quite a few of us training. We had three of us at Olympic Trials in 68.
Mm-hmm.
From our team,
yeah.
And we trained, you know, in the summertime, we trained twice a day. We had a beach club pool that was 50 meters long, and that was our home in the summer, and that was awesome.
Uh-huh.
So we did doubles in the summer, double workouts, and in the wintertime, we did what we could, 5 days a week, a couple hours.
Okay.
That makes sense. Trained mercilessly like everybody else.
Okay, absolutely. All right, so the year before, the trials were held out in California, right?
The trials were in California.
Yeah.
When I was 12, I broke a national age group record in 100 freestyle. And then when I was 13, I went to my first senior nationals in Oklahoma, Bartlesville.
Wow.
And I placed in the top eight, although there were only six lanes then. Oh, my God, the pools were so old. And they didn't have consolation finals or anything. So only the top six were some finals.
Right.
So that was my first nationals. And then I was 13. When I was 14, I got second in the 200 backstroke at the Indoor Nationals in 1968, right before Olympic trials.
Yeah.
And the girl that beat me broke the American record. I broke it too, but I got second. And then I had never swum backstroke before, so I don't know why or where that came from. And actually, I never was able to swim that race so well again. Right.
Okay, and what did you think about the Olympic trials? Do you remember, what were your impressions of competing at that kind of a level? You done? Yeah.
Honestly?
Yeah.
For me, I don't know. It's funny. I was actually I was terrified. Even though it was the same, it was basically just like any other national meet. I knew that there was so much at stake at that in this meet. Oh. And even though they were the same people I've been competing against for, the last, I guess it's only 2 years. It seemed like forever back then.
Yes, ma'am.
You just knew that it was different. It was significant that this was it. And I remember thinking, it was all tied up in knots and a bundle of nerves. I guess other people say that they were really cool about everything, but I wasn't,
mm-hmm.
and I admit it.
Uh-huh.
And I just remember the realization. I was taking a hot bath because my legs were sore, and I had this very vivid realization that nobody can help me. I'm the only person that can do this. There's no one that can help me.
Wow.
It's all me. I'm responsible for the whole thing.
Wow.
And to think that and realize that at 15, like, to me, was almost like a turning point. Like, from that moment, from that moment forward, I realized that basically in life, you can get a hand sometimes, but the only one that can do anything is basically yourself. So.
That is a pretty mature realization for a 15-year-old.
And it was frightening.
Oh, yeah.
But I really didn't want to fail,
Yeah. Is that what you... What did you like most about the competition? Was it winning or just the competing? Or what did you... Do you remember what you enjoyed?
What did I enjoy about the competition? Well, one thing I do know, I enjoyed competition more than I enjoyed training.
Ah.
I wasn't one of those people that liked to bang my head against the wall. What do I enjoy about competition? You know what? I guess I like winning.
Yeah.
I was outwardly cool competitor, but I was always a nervous competitor. I wasn't the kid that could just jolly along with it. I had to go sit by myself. I had to focus. I was kind of serious about winning or at least placing what I thought was going to be respectable for me. I mean, I liked to race. I didn't like anybody to touch the wall before me. I liked to get to the wall first. I don't know.
Right. No, that's a really, really good description, actually. How did your family and friends react to you not only making the Olympic trials, but then once you made the team?
Well, I guess it was kind of surreal. I placed fifth in the 100 freestyle and fifth in the 200 IM. So I was an alternate on the team. At the time, you know, the Americans were so dominant in the world picture that although I placed fifth in the 200 diameter Olympic trials, I was also fifth in the world that year because it was only us, Americans.
Wow.
We were the top, you know, we were the top. I think we got first, second, and third in almost every single Olympic event except the 200 fly at the Olympics.
Yes, ma'am.
So it was kind of a dogfight, basically, to, you know, and the amount of time that separated the people in the 103 was very small. You know, there was not a lot of space.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody reacted. You know what? It's an incredible moment when you realize you've made a team, even though that you're going, you know you're going to be a relay reserve or an alternate. You know, the moment that you realize that you are now an Olympian,
yeah.
And it's such a long shot to become that,
mm-hmm.
because so many things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
You train your whole life for a particular moment, and then, you know, what happens? Maybe you have a bad turn, or you get sick, or, you know, a million things can happen. So just to be able to say that this actually happened to me today,
uh-huh.
and you did your best, you know, I did my best times. It was my best performance. I had every reason to feel relieved. I felt a lot of relief. I think my parents were ecstatic.
You know? Yeah.
You know, everyone's thrilled by something like this happening. And for me,
mm-hmm.
you know, I had a great sense of relief and then bewilderment because I didn't know what was going to happen next.
Yeah. Okay, and then the next step is going to the Air Force Academy to train?
The next step was all that stuff. And it's lots of stuff. Posing for a team picture, getting your clothes, trying to figure out getting your itinerary, you know, flying here, flying there by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're 15, you know, I flew to the Air Force Academy by myself. You know, your parents don't come with you, and you know we were. Some of us were little girls,
right?
But we were used to traveling because we've been traveling around the country for years competing. So, but to go on your own at 15 to train with people that you know idolize, worship, world record holders, and everything, it's daunting.
Yeah,
it's daunting. Oh my God! Now I'm going to train behind Denny Meyer. I'll never keep up. You know, I wonder if I can do it. I wonder if I can keep up.
Yeah, and how was that? How was the pre-games regimen and training? Did your times improve? Did you like being among those?
Yes, once you get adjusted to it, and I felt that I did pretty well at altitude. I didn't struggle that much to breathe at altitude. I know it affected everybody a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there a long time.
Yeah,
we were there 3 weeks or more, maybe four.
Right. Did the doctors do any kind of physiological studies on you guys or anything else during that
time?
Oh,
no. No.
Okay.
This was 1968.
Right.
They just every day weighed us. I know they weighed us.
Yeah.
And we ate at the Air Force Academy the most fabulous food ever. We really looked forward to eating.
That's
like,
awesome.
It was so good.
Did you?
We stayed in a motel.
Uh huh.
We didn't do much but get to know each other and hang out.
Right. Did you get pretty close with some of your teammates?
Oh yeah. I mean, I had known, you know, many of them. I had also, you know, I'd known many of them and had competed against them for years. Some of them were older than me. Actually, most of them were, obviously.
Right.
And then my roommate, Diane, mm-hmm. she was 15 also, so we were roommates there, and we knew each other through a friend,
mm-hmm.
and we became best friends.
Wow.
For life. My daughter got married on October 27th, and she came with her daughter, and our daughters are friends, too.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, for life, really. We're friends for life.
That's outstanding. That's
we still talk on the phone.
That's great. that's amazing. That's amazing.
So we always have a lot of memories.
Yeah. Do you remember anything leading up to, or did your parents allude to anything about going to Mexico City as far, you know, the, like they had the Harvard crew letter for human rights was about, or was that a little, since you were 15, a little bit above you, if you will, if you don't mind me?
No. I think a lot of, it was already, 1968 was a tumultuous year as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that there was unrest in Mexico City about the game.
Yeah.
Why, you know, the details of that at the time weren't clear to us.
Right.
But it was unsettling. There were, you know, it was an unsettling time. I remember being shocked when we got there and driving on buses. I remember being shocked by some of the conditions that I saw people were living under.
Yeah.
We had never seen, you know, anything like that.
Right.
And I remember feeling, you know, kind of, I don't know, shocked is the word. I don't know, maybe understanding that maybe, you know, we live in a bubble a bit. But so, yeah, there were a lot of politics, you know. I think Bobby Kennedy had gotten killed before the game.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if Martin Luther King had already been killed.
Yeah.
Fascinated.
Did you hear about the student protests and the massacre right before the games, like 10 days before
yeah.
the game?
Yeah.
You were already down there by that time, weren't you?
We were down there. No, we heard about the protests before the game.
Okay.
Then there were protests the last night of the game.
Oh, yeah.
Students came into the village and marched through the streets.
Wow. Were you scared?
We went to the roof of the building. Were we?
Yeah. Were you scared?
Well, I think so. I think we were,
mm-hmm.
but we were almost too young to be that. Although we didn't have a lot of, I don't know where our chaperones were at the time. You know, the women's village was surrounded by like we had guards.
Yeah,
we were at a separate village, and I guess we thought that we were protected in there because we had people watching who came and went.
Uh huh.
I think it was a little scary.
Mm-hmm.
I remember feeling a little bit scared, but it was also kind of, I don't think I really thought something would happen to us.
Right.
And that's probably because I was 15.
Yeah.
I suppose something could have happened to us.
Absolutely.
But you have a sense of immortality when you're that age. You're like, okay, the adults will take care of it, but still.
Yeah.
You know, where are they? They weren't in the building with us all the time, you know.
Yeah.
So we went to bed, and then the next day we got out of there.
Right. Okay. When you guys arrived down in Mexico City, did you have a chance to get out, or did you stay in the Olympic Village almost entirely?
They let us out. You know, another thing I remember that I should mention, it was right after the Olympics took place. Shortly after the Soviet Union had invaded Czechoslovakia, so there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of animosity with that.
Yeah. Do you remember? I mean, do you remember at 15 hearing about that and?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
And I had also become friendly with a couple of the Russian swimmers.
Really? That's
they were allude to it, but you know, people weren't. You know, I guess people didn't want that to be that conversation to be the focus for them because they had to compete.
Yeah.
You know.
Were you able to communicate with them and hang out with them, or what were your impressions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They speak English pretty well.
Wow. What were your impressions of just as really good swimmers, or were you intrigued that they were Soviets, or?
Yes, and they were friendly and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They were interesting. We were able to get out. We went out without just ourselves, me and Diane. We one time went to a bullfight, and then we one time went out for pizza. We weren't that adventurous because we didn't want to get lost, and yeah. We tried to stick to a simple plan and then come back. I remember Nike and Adidas. I remember Adidas was like the new thing, the new shoe.
Uh-huh.
We didn't have them at home or anything, and I remember I bought a pair of red, maybe I bought Pumas, whatever they were at the time, you know, running shoes that were new. And I came home with a pair of red Pumas with a white stripe, and I was the only kid in my high school to have any shoes like that. I remember that.
Very cool.
Like they have.
Were you and Diane roommates? Was it just you two, or did you have like a whole bunch?
It was us two at training camp.
Yeah,
and then we had a regular nice hotel, you know, motel room. And then at the Olympic Games, there were four or five of us, all 15-year-olds. And maybe nobody else wanted us. And then. We shared a suite with the gymnastics team.
Oh, yeah.
So Kathy Rigby was in our suite.
How about that?
Yep. Kathy Rigby, the whole team, was with us.
How was the food down there?
Not good.
Ah.
I don't want to be insulting to anyone, but...
No, you're not. That's just...
The food wasn't really very good, and we were told not to eat a lot of things, so, you know, we were really careful about what we didn't eat. I was always like staring. I was leery about it. Like, you know, what is this? Is this meat? So I ate the pancakes and some grapes. Usually I eat pancakes. Oh, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I went to the World University Games in Russia in 1973.
Uh-huh.
And the food was so fabulous.
Oh, wow.
I know a lot of people complained about it, but I thought it was so great. I didn't mind having potato salad with crab meat in it with black olives for breakfast. I thought that was great. Everything was good.
Did you get to participate in the opening ceremony?
I did.
What do you remember?
I remember the opening ceremony was on a grand scale. You know, it was, oh, gosh. What's the word I'm searching for? Opening ceremonies are emotional in a lot of ways.
Sure.
You know, it feels like it's a momentous thing. You get to observe. Just lining up in the right spot. Challenge.
Yeah.
I tend to go to the details. And I remember we had Tom McCann shoes, and I remember my feet were killing me by the end of the by the end of the walk. No insult to Tom McCann. And this is the first time you realize that you're part of an internet. When you're 15, you're at the Olympic Games. You realize for the first time in your life that you're actually part of an international community.
Uh huh. Yeah.
And that people are not so different as you think they are. Everyone's experienced the same emotion. Everyone's experienced similar excitement, and everyone's eager to talk to one another, whether or not you can speak the same language. Everybody feels good.
Mm-hmm.
I like looking at the clothes and the outfits.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm my mother's daughter that way. I like seeing what everybody was wearing. I still like to do that at the opening ceremonies when I watch sports.
Right.
So it's exhilarating.
Yeah.
Tiring, but it's tiring. I chose not to go to the opening ceremonies at the World University Games because I had to swim the next day, and I knew I couldn't. I'd be tired.
Yeah, because it's pretty emotionally draining, isn't it? It's kind of overwhelming.
Yeah, and it's like a long night. You know, it's hours and hours, and you're standing, and you're walking, and you're standing, and you're walking. So, you know. It's a big night.
Yeah. Wow. And this, you know, you're talking about some of the Soviet athletes that you talked to. This was the very first East German athletes that actually competed in that. Did you have any interactions with any of them that you remember?
No.
Okay.
No. I don't remember. Australians I remember talking to. I don't remember East Germans.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember them being a major presence in that game. Of course, in 72, they have a major controversial presence known. Let's say one more thing about the opening ceremony. When it gives you goosebumps when the torchbearer runs into the stadium.
Yeah.
That's the moment. That's the moment.
That's pretty vivid in almost everyone's memory. That and the birds. I've got
the birds. Yes, and putting the newspaper on our head so that we didn't ruin our clothes.
from what I understand, that they had quite a few doves.
I remember another really good friend of mine, Ellie Daniel. She says she always knew what to do. First, she was 2 years older. Dude, there's a newspaper. Put it on your head. I'm like, why? She goes, just do it.
That's great. What events did you swim in the 68 Olympics?
I qualified in the 200 IM and the 100 freestyle. It was alternate.
Okay. And did you how long after the opening ceremonies were the competition for those?
You know what? I can't say as I remember, and I'm not sure if even my friend Diane would remember that.
Yeah, it's
we were in a fog.
Yeah,
we were in a total fog. And it's not like you, information wasn't available. So we couldn't go on the computer and say, what day is, you know, let's look and see the order of events. Let's go, you know, let's check the time. We would just sit around and wait for people to tell us where to go and what to do. There's no way to check anything then.
What did you think about the facilities there?
Oh, the pool was the facilities were beautiful.
Right.
You know, the rooms that we stayed in were bare bones. You know, mm-hmm. Concrete structure, like not much going on.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like today. I'm sure I don't know.
Yeah.
But you know, the dormitories or the village, where we slept and ate, was just basic bare bones. Not much.
Right. But the pool was good.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. Good. Were you guys training? Do you remember a training regiment before the event, or no?
Not really. We were almost like, I guess people were in warm up mode by then.
Yeah.
You know, paper.
Okay.
Tape.
Did you swim? Did you swim on for competition in the heat?
I did not.
Okay. Because you were an alternate, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And some years they do it and some years they don't.
Right.
That year they did not.
Okay. This was the first games that they tested for banned substances and performance enhancements and everything else. Did you have to go through any of that?
I don't remember anybody going through that. Actually, I don't.
It's funny. All the guys remember that. They're like, yeah. They're like peeing.
They weren't doing it to the girls. I don't know. I don't remember that.
And it was the very first Olympics that they did gender testing as well. Did you hear about that, or anyone having to go through that?
I did hear about that.
Ah.
That I kind of heard about.
Okay. What was the impression? Did you think that's kind of strange? That someone would be checking to see if girls were girls?
Did I think it was strange to see that people were checking to see if girls were girls? I always thought that if girls looked like they were men, they were still girls. Let me see, what would I think at the time? Boy, so-and-so really looks like a guy. But I didn't think they could actually check to see if that person was a guy.
Right.
I just assumed that was just a girl that looked like a guy. I didn't even... At the time, I didn't give it much thought.
Were the female Olympians treated differently than their male counterparts?
We had a curfew. I don't know if the men did.
Okay.
We actually had to be in at a certain time. I don't know if the men had the same curfew.
All right. Do you think it's different for female Olympians today as compared to, like, 1968?
Do I think it's different for females today than 1968? I think that the sport of swimming is a pretty democratic sport. It's one of the few sports where the men and the women, we always train together. You know, growing up, we trained with boys. Or, you know, women and men trained together.
Right.
At the Olympic Games, the men trained separately from us. We could have a women's coach, and then there was a men's coach. I don't know if that's so today.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, having said that, I think that female swimmers have always been treated pretty much equal to male swimmers because of the fact that we train together.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily feel that we were treated any differently than the men were. I think that I feel like in sport, I think the sports community has given women equal respect to men, knowing that their capabilities are, knowing that they're also the best of the best for them. And there's a certain respect given to women in sport that maybe was lacking in other areas of the culture at the time.
Hmm, that's well said.
Within the sport.
Sure.
Within.
Yeah.
That didn't mean that there was going to be a high school team for me to swim on, because nobody wanted that yet. That didn't mean that there was going to be a college team for me to be on.
Right.
Even that wasn't established yet.
Yeah.
But within the sport, within the Olympic team of the United States, I think the female swimmers received as much respect as the male swimmers received from the coaching staff and from the public. In terms of their response to that, these are elite athletes.
Right.
I don't know. I don't even know how I said that, but I think maybe you get what I mean.
No, I think you did well. did you go to any other events, or did you stay around the pool, or did you go to some track and field, or gymnastics, or anything like that?
We went to some gymnastics. I don't know if we went to any track and field. We watched. There were televisions in common spaces,
mm-hmm.
and we watched it. And you know, now that you're saying that too, when you're at the Olympics back then, and you don't have a computer or access to printed information, you can't really go around and find things. You know, it was not the era of instant information.
Right. Did you witness Tommy Smith and John Carlos protests on the medal stand?
Saw that. I believe we saw that on the television. I'm trying to remember if I was there or not. I might have been.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to ask Diane. I'll have to say, were we there? Because we did everything together. Were we at that, or did we watch it?
Right.
On the television.
Do you remember having any thoughts about it at the time?
What were my thoughts about that? I think that I gave a speech once at Princeton, and it was mostly about this. I should have pulled it out before you called me. I think that I had an understanding, a deep understanding, that the world was changing.
Ah.
That it wasn't the same world that my parents lived in the 1950s.
Yeah.
That the world wasn't as safe a place at the moment, and that there was a lot of change going on, and that there was a lot of uncertainty.
Now, since then, do you have your feelings changed, or what you think about what they did or what they were trying to do? Have your feelings about it changed at all?
I feel that, you know what? How can I put this? I think that people have the right to protest. I think that, that people, in many cases, have good reason to protest. Do I feel that this forum was the right place? I'm not sure. But if you want to get attention for what you're protesting, this is a good place to do it because you got a lot of attention.
Yeah. Right. What do you think the USOC's and IOC's response? Do you think how they responded to it? Do you think it was appropriate, or do you think it was over?
You know what? You have to remind me, what was the response again? I know it was momentous, but I'm.
Yeah, it's all right. They took the medals away from them.
That's right. They did.
Yeah.
Do I think it was appropriate?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But when you're living in a time when there's so much change like that, mm-hmm. when you take an action that's radical, mm-hmm. you get a backlash.
Yeah.
And you probably should expect a backlash.
Yeah.
Anytime somebody fights for change or protests the way something is, there's going to be people that are going to double back and backlash twice as hard.
Absolutely. Do you remember the media, like the TV cameras, photographers, news reporters, and things like that back then?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a big deal.
Yeah. Did you? What do you think of the media's response for what Smith and Carlos did?
What do I think of the media? Remember, I'm 15.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, you may not. It's like, yeah. That's fine.
No, I'm 15. You know, what is the media? You know what? 1968 was a crazy year.
Yeah.
Crazy. And I remember that whole time, 68, 69, 70. I remember, you know, leaving high school to go to the Olympic Games, and the Beach Boys and the Temptations and the Four Seasons were playing. The Beatles were just coming into their own with their, you know, the music that they were moving toward, their more narrative songs. You know, they're moving to Hey Jude and other kinds of music, not I Want to Hold Your Hand. Then, when I came back from the Olympics, the entire world had changed. The entire world had changed. We had Jim Morrison. We had Eric Clapton. We had, the whole world was in protest mode. It was a different world that I came back to than when I left.
Wow, that's interesting. That's a really interesting perspective, huh?
When I left, people were wearing knee socks and penny loafers, and it seemed like when I came back, mm-hmm. people were wearing, you know, trying to go to school with no shoes on, and no, you know, it was an entirely different world.
Wow.
So, I think what that Olympic protest, you know, I knew the world was, we were in the middle of something here, and I knew, in hindsight, that can be just seen as part of it.
Right. Wow. Really well done. Well said. Do you remember any other memorable or interesting events at the games for you? Anything that you witnessed that you like, maybe a world record or anything like that that you can remember being impressed upon?
I remember the famous gymnast getting married. What was her name? She was the 1964, the one that Kathy Rigby beat. She was famous at the time. She was a world record holder. She was a world champion. Oh, my God. Whatever her name was. She got married at the Village.
Uh-huh.
I guess she married another handsome athlete, and they were driving down the Olympic Village in a convertible in her wedding dress. And I remember watching that from our window. And then she passed, and then the protesters came in right on the heels of it. It seemed to me it all happened at once.
Wow.
It all happened at once.
Huh.
So I guess you know, there was a lot going on. When I went to Princeton.
Yes, ma'am.
There were no women at that school. I was the first class of women admitted to go for 4 years.
Wow.
So, you know, you talk about everything changing. When we went to Princeton, the men didn't want us there. People were protesting that. Students were protesting that we were actually even there. They wanted it to remain an all-male institution. And there was no swim team there. And we had to request one. My sophomore year, we had six girls. We got six girls to start a team. But they wouldn't give us sweatsuits or anything. They weren't ready to do anything like that. We had to get, you know, cast off from men's teams in the past. So I guess what I'm saying is there was so much social change going on. There was so much social change going on at the time.
Absolutely.
One of my daughters said to me, "You mean there was no, you couldn't have a college swimming team when you were in college because you were because girls?" I think yeah, girls. Yeah, girls. We didn't call them women. We weren't women then either. We were girls.
Right, you were girls.
So
right.
We were girls. I said, "No, girls. No, girls didn't have teams then." Are you kidding? Weren't you furious? No, we weren't furious because we didn't know any better. We didn't ever expect it to happen.
That's awesome. You talk about quite a bit of culture change, huh?
Yeah. Weren't you furious about what? We just, you know, we figured that we were, you know, I was still on the cusp of the generation where basically, you know, we weren't, in where I grew up, we weren't even so much encouraged to go to college. Girls could go if they felt like it. Otherwise, you just get married and you just have kids and hang around. It was still the 50s model, halfway, 50% 50s.
Right. Did you go to the closing ceremonies in the 68 games?
That's a good question. You should have done me and Diane at the same time. Diane, did we go to that? I think I might have gone to that, yes. I think I did go.
Okay. Do you have
any... Isn't that awful? Isn't that terrible?
No, it's not. No, it isn't at all. Your memories are your memories.
Oh, gosh, it's terrible. You know, it's funny because 4 years later when I went to the other meet, the meet in Russia, the World University Games, I'm really clear about what happened then.
Right.
I'm very clear about the sequence of everything.
Put it this way. Well, I mean, that's that. Then you're 19 instead of 15. Different context. I mean, your brain does a lot of growing, and you do a lot of maturing between 15 and 19. Absolutely.
You do.
Yeah.
You know, and then you know, and also you know, at that World University Games, there still was, you know, the Iron Curtain was still up. It hadn't come down yet.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You finished up the Olympics and you go back home. So did you go back?
Yeah.
High school, just get in so you can finish up, or how was post Olympic Games for you right afterwards?
Junior year of high school.
Yeah.
Went back.
Okay. How was? Did everyone welcome you home? Were you kind of the hometown hero?
Yeah, but you know, it's very, very difficult. It was very difficult.
In what way?
Because I had spent, you know, I started swimming when I was 7. I was 15 when I made the Olympic team. I spent 50% of my life aiming for this one thing, and then it was done.
Yeah.
And you know, in at that time, women were considered to have hit their prime by the time they were 17, like or 18, like you were going to be over with. Not like today. You know, people thought that you were done. And I took a year off from swimming because basically I needed a break. And I just didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't have a plan. You know, I didn't have a good plan.
Yeah.
And I had also, because I was so intent, I was so involved in the sport, it took, you know, all my waking, you know, it was just nothing but that. I didn't have a lot of, I didn't have enough other interests to dive right back into. So I felt kind of like unhinged, you know. I just was like floating around. I felt like I was aimless.
Wow.
Now, the good thing about taking you off of swimming is that I found I had to find things that I was interested in or that I liked, or, you know, spend more time with my friends and figure out how to do it. Because you, when all you're doing is competing, you kind of get hooked on adrenaline. You have to learn how to calm down.
So tell me a little bit about your athletic career after the games. I know you took a break, but then you...
I took a break. I took a year and a half break.
Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't. I took longer than that. I took a year and a half break, and then my freshman year at Princeton, I didn't swim either.
Ah.
Sophomore year, because there was no team.
Right.
And just training, like I guess I said before, just training isn't something I like that much. I like to race, and if I was just going to, work out, you know, that doesn't appeal to me. So my sophomore year at Princeton, you know, like I said, we got six girls together, and we started a small de facto team, kind of loosely organized. But I trained for the 72 trials. I took that year to train for that.
Yeah.
So I went. I actually went to the trials again.
How'd you do in those trials?
I got sixth in the 103.
Oh, wow.
I was thrilled with myself because I hadn't been swimming for 2 years.
Absolutely. No, I would say so.
And you're like, are you sad you didn't make the team? I'm like, are you kidding? I was so thrilled. So happy with myself. And I swam a whole second faster than I've ever done before. And I was like, I'm thrilled. Okay, that's it. But my junior and senior year at Princeton, Junior at Princeton, I was NC2A for AIAW at the time, champion in the 100 and the 3 and 100 fly, and that's how I made the World University Games team. And then our Princeton relay broke an American record at 100 free relay that year.
Wow.
And then my senior year, I again won two events at the NC2A.
Okay, so did you leave the sport so after that, or did you keep your involvement in some way, shape, or form with swimming, or?
I left the sport for a while because I had three children.
Mm-hmm.
I've coached on and off through the years, but for the last 25 years, I've been coaching Central Jersey Aquatic Club, which is the team that basically the team I swam for as a child, just with a different name.
Uh-huh.
And I've been coaching this team, co-coaching with a friend of mine for 25 years, the same team.
That's awesome.
So I guess I'm saying I have not left the sport.
You have not left the sport. No, matter of fact, if you would have said you have, I've read some articles about you that, no, you have not.
I have not left the sport. I really enjoy being around kids. That's a big part of my motivation. I like being around young people.
Absolutely.
I enjoy it.
So looking back on your athletic career, who or what was your biggest influence or motivator for involving in athletics? Can you pinpoint anything?
Let me see. Who is my biggest motivator? I think motivation comes from a lot of different sources. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd like to credit, you know, my coach this or my parent that. I think that, you know, I've had great coaches. I've had parents that were hands-off in terms of my swimming career, but hands-on in terms of keeping me fed and getting me enough rest and giving me perspective.
Yeah.
I have to credit my parents with a lot with allowing me to decide about how motivated I want to be. They were the same way with schoolwork. They never even asked if I did my schoolwork.
Wow.
They didn't even check anything like that. They just assumed that I was going to do the right thing.
Hmm.
So I have to give them credit. Like I said, I've had great coaches, different styles. And I think that teammates motivate you? I've had great teammates. They're really good friends of mine.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people I've competed against being good motivators for me.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And pumping me up and you know, helping me out. Or me help. You know, it's a two-way street. We help each other out.
Sure. How do you think your life would have been different if you had not gotten involved in swimming? Or if you had not, you know, done well enough to take it to, you know, the elite level of intensity of training for competition?
You know, it's hard to say how your life would be different if you weren't a swimmer, or, you know, how, you know, it's like saying, you know, what would it feel like to be adopted? I don't know. I've never not been adopted, you know. I think that participating, and it might sound cliche,
mm-hmm.
but I think one of the most important things about being involved in a particular activity, and if you don't make it to the top, you know, most people don't make it to the top, but they stay with the activity anyway, and there's got to be a lot of reasons for that. You know, most of the social fabric of my life revolves around this particular sport.
Right.
My best friendship, people that understand me and I understand them, lifelong relationship, and I know that's true also of my children. You know, my daughter swam at UMass, and her UMass swim team is, the girls are still her best buddies, and my youngest daughter Christina, who just got married, her best childhood friends were people she swam with, and they were just in her wedding. So there's a lot of sense of community, and I don't think you have to be a great swimmer or a great athlete to participate in a sport and experience the sense of community that you get from it.
Outstanding. What were did you have any personal experience with like eligibility rules or gifts or support payments for sponsors or anything like that? Back then.
Yeah, we didn't have any of that. my daughter graduated, got her master's at Tufts University, and Bill Cosby was the speaker.
Wow.
And he said. He said, nowadays they want to talk about ADHD and ADD.
Mm-hmm.
He said, when I was a kid, we didn't have none of that. He said, we had BAD and DUMB. when you just said to me, like, did we have eligibility? We didn't really have anything like that. I don't remember anything like that.
Yeah,
it was before that.
Yeah, you don't remember any challenges to the amateur status.
No, not really.
That kids have to kind of run into nowadays, right?
Yeah, no, that never really happened. Nobody ever tried to give us anything.
Yeah, especially if you're getting hand-me-downs from Princeton University.
I know. I have to say.
Yep.
By the time we graduated Princeton, we got regular things. No Tigers. We did. We got regular sweat. I mean, the senior year.
That's a lot of progress.
Yeah, but even, like, I don't even remember, like, bathing suits, like Speedo saying, you know, if you wear this, I don't remember anything like that happening. It just didn't happen then.
Okay, so it's
not my world, my experience.
What do you think about what goes on today with all that, with like sponsorships and things for you know, helping the amateur athlete?
I guess it's so complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It's really complicated, and this is how I know I'm about to be 60. It's got to be complicated for the athlete. You have to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it's better to be in a simpler place. Maybe you're not going to make any money or get as famous for what you've done, but, you know, it's a lot. It's complicated. I would assume it's complicated. I We just had our big hurricane here.
Yeah.
And our area has been decimated.
All right. Are you okay? Are you okay?
Yeah.
Are you and your
I
girls?
Am.
Okay. And your girls?
But I've got one in Boston and one in Nashville.
Okay.
And they're fine. But I didn't have a phone. My fault. I dropped it in the sink. But I didn't have power and I didn't have a phone for a while, and it was actually a pleasure. You know, there's something to having a little bit more simple existence. But you know, I think it must be a lot of pressure on the athletes like that today. I don't know.
What kind of?
I haven't talked to any of them. I wonder how they would feel about that stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. What one piece of advice would you give to an Olympic hopeful today?
What piece of advice would I give to an Olympic hopeful today? Well, I guess we just had one of our DJX swimmers swim the Olympics this summer. He's at the University of Michigan, though, so we weren't so involved with giving him advice. Just, you know, he's got a coach there. What advice would I give to Olympic football? As far as making the team, or as far as, and how do you mean that?
Well, what kind of someone wants to? If you've got someone that wants to, they hope to make the Olympics sometime. Do you have any advice that you'd give them if they're like, hey, Kathy? I mean, you know, what would you suggest?
I suggest that you have to be consistent 90% of the time. And I suggest that you have to see the project as your daily work. And see everything one day at a time. Do the best you can each day, and people can't give 100%. It's not possible. But if you can be consistent 90% of the time and give your best, maybe about the same amount of time, and keep your big goal in mind, but don't let it overwhelm your daily life.
I think that's great advice. I think that's great.
You have to live.
Right.
You have to compartmentalize.
Yeah.
If you're always like, what if this, what if this, what if that, what if that, you're not really, take it for a job and take it day to day, because after all, your daily work is what your life's about.
Yes, ma'am. What do you think the significance of the 1968 Olympic Games were? I mean, you've alluded to a lot about how much change was going on, and but how did being an Olympian impact your life? Do you think it impacted your life a whole bunch?
Yes. Yeah. It becomes part of the definition of who you are. There's a lot of ways that we define ourselves.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you think of yourself, you think of yourself as I am, you know, I'm tall, I'm short, I'm this, I'm that, I'm bad at math, I'm good at art, you know, there's so many ways we define ourselves. Oh my God. It's a way of defining yourself. It's a positive way.
Yeah.
You know, it's a positive.
Mm-hmm.
It's humbling. Because you know, sometimes you feel you don't deserve to get that recognition, even though you work for it. You feel like sometimes I feel it's just an accident, like it was an accident of fate, and that's partly true. It partly is true. How does it change your life? I don't know. That's a very complicated question.
It is, but you're doing magnificently with it. I think that's great.
Really?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. In your opinion, do you think that the 68 game specifically, do you think it had a unique aspect in Olympic Games? And did it have an effect on the world, do you think, at all?
Well, I think now that we're talking about it, I think the social and political changes that were going on around the world, and the ramifications, you know, had some expression in the Olympic Games themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Olympic Games were not immune to what was going on in the world. They were a reflection in many ways of what was happening.
I agree with you. What do you think? I mean, in the oral history project that that we're doing here, do you think this interview, this project, this archive, and the preservation of the 68 Olympic team legacy, do you think it'll have meaning to you or your family, your daughters, or anything else?
I think so. I think that oral history is kind of lost. I think I would be interested in hearing what people say about any Olympic Games. I would love to hear what someone said about the 1936 Olympic Games. Talk about change.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And each generation has its own cultural cultural message and its own cultural significance. And in that sense, it's just part of history in general.
Yes, ma'am.
So, you know, it's always more than the Olympic Games are more than what the results were and who got 7 medals. The Olympic Games is, to me, it's still a miracle that the entire world can get together and actually do this, considering how difficult it is to live in the world today and actually get this job done. It's a miracle to me that this happens, that this can happen, and that we still enjoy it, and that people still come together for it in good spirit.
Again, well said. I agree. I agree completely with you. Well, anything else about your recollections that you wanna share? You wanna tell us about?
Yeah, well, little things. I'll just say a few little things.
Sure.
In case any young girls or young women to be PC, like, no. We didn't have hair dryers. They weren't invented yet. We didn't have our own soaps and stuff. We had to use what we were given. We weren't allowed to take our own stuff. What else didn't we have? Well, obviously, we didn't have cell phones, we didn't have computers, we had none of the modern conveniences. Wait, I'm just trying to think what girls might be interested in. People still had to wear pantyhose with their outfits,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, stuff like that. But we didn't have hair dryers or anything. Little conveniences that people can't go without anymore, you know. Snacks weren't, you know, there wasn't really even invented like little packaged snacks except for like maybe a bag of potato chips. There was no such thing as grabbing a quick something.
Do you have any questions of me as we kind of wrap this up?
What made you get involved in this?
Oh, actually, well, I'm a graduate student here at the University of Texas, and my professors, one of my professors and close friends, Dr. Tommy Hunt, is actually doing is heading up this project, and he asked if I wanted to be involved, and I jumped at it.
Uh-huh. And what kind of interest did you have in this?
Sure.
In the Olympics before you started the contest.
Let me close out the interview first, because no one wants to hear this from me. So let me. We'll close out the interview and I'll turn off the recorder, and then you and I, you can ask me anything you want.
That doesn't seem fair.
I know, but I'm not an Olympian. No one wants to hear from me. But
no one wants to hear from me either. Go ahead.
But what I want to do is thank you very much for your time and your memories on the Olympics and your whole experience. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
Hope I didn't bore anybody. But...